Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it's Tuesday night in the big town, the big county, Montgomery County. You're listening to the program called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negger, and I'm here every Tuesday night talking about the issues that emanate from the county of Montgomery. Richard Montgomery was killed in the Battle of Quebec, I believe. I'm not sure at the moment. It's on my webpage. I used to know what's going on. I don't know what's going on anymore. I am fried. Tough day at work. Tough day with the kids. Not really. It was a good day with the kids. Dinner was fun. Kids decided that they're going to have jobs now. They're going to get tickets, home tickets. Every time they do something right, they're going to get a ticket so they can get a reward or something. You know, how about you just do something right because I asked you to? Rotten kids. Just spent 16 hours in a car with them this past weekend. Drove down to Charleston, South Carolina, visit my brother-in-law. Works on the H.L. Hunley, the submarine that blew up the Housatonic and then never made it back. So he's been working on this project for about 13 years to figure out why the Hunley never got back to port. And they still, you know what? I'm going to let you in on a little secret. They still don't know why. Got a lot of good artifacts. They actually found the bones and the remains of the crew. Gave them a proper burial in Charleston about 7 years ago or so. Now, it's part of Clemson's University Research Program in South Carolina, you know, very steeped in the tradition of the Stars and Bars of the Confederacy with Fort Sumter and H.L. Hunley. They really take it seriously down there. And it's funny because they had some it's just interesting how the Confederate flag, to me, has changed as well. When I grew up in New Rochelle, the team's name was called the Rebels. They tried to make it the Rebels. And then so they waved the Confederate flag at the games and stuff like that. It was the Rebels. It was these guys who, I guess this was 1982, 1981. So it was like the Confederate flag was like cool. And now, you know, there were a couple shirts for the Hunley, and I know it's celebrating the history, but bringing it back up to Montgomery County, I was like, I can't wear that shirt. I mean, and it had a little bit of the Confederate flag in there, just a little bit. And it was a really nice shirt. Except for that, I couldn't do it, you know. Just couldn't do it. Can't bring myself to it. I can't bring myself to it because of what happened in Georgia. You know, the state flag of Georgia had the stars and bars in the corner. It was a blue flag with the stars and bars in the corner. And everyone's saying, we've got to change the flag, got to change the flag. And when I first moved to Georgia, you know, I was a carpetbagger. I didn't know what was going on. I was like Hillary Clinton. But anyway, I was down there, and I'm like, oh, no, you can't change it. It's part of history. You know, if something's part of history, you got to leave it alone. And then I realized, you know, that Georgia flag came into effect was 1954. The heart of segregation, the heart of discrimination, the heart of Jim Crow, Brown versus the Board of Education, the whole nine. Get rid of that flag. I mean, what does it stand for? It didn't stand for the Confederacy and some noble cause or some lost cause. It stood for exactly why they were flying it. Exactly what got bastardized by, you know, with this flag and the idea of white supremacy and, you know, and slavery, et cetera. In 1954, you can't change your state flag to put the stars and bars in there without saying it didn't have a meaning and then keep it for the next 35 years, 40 years. That was bad news. It was definitely bad news. And I signed a petition. I said, change the state flag. Once I found out the year that the flag was put into effect, there's no history to that flag. That flag is just a symbol of saying, stay down. I'm going to step on your neck and stay down. It's not what I'm about. It's not how I roll, right? I don't roll anywhere. Too fat to roll. I wobble. Anyway, I told you the program's called Outside Looking In. Just like that, I could get off on a tangent, and I love it. because this program is free form again. We got a couple topics, but it's free form. I want to make you part of the show tonight. If you got the guts to get up off the couch, go to the window and say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore, then call this program. Program's phone number. I'll wait. You got a pencil? You got a pen? I'll wait. Hold on. Okay. All right. I hear you walking. No, that one doesn't work. Get the new pen. Okay, now you got it. The phone number is 773-897-6423. Once again, that's 773-897-6423. If you want to get on the program and talk to me about these particular topics or anything that's on your mind, I think I'm going to refuse to talk about the Rangers and the Capitals. I can't take it. I don't want to talk about it. A game seven. You know where my loyalties lie. I am Ranger through and through. So much so, I got all these superstitions, and it's terrible to live a superstitious life. Because when you live a superstitious life, it just gets in the way. Everything is a superstition. You can't move here. You can't do that. My wife doesn't understand it. She's starting to see it a little bit, but she doesn't understand it. And the funny part is she's down here right now collecting the laundry, and I know she's laughing at me. She doesn't believe in the jinx or superstitions, but she's starting to understand what the jinx is because it's happening too much. We're driving around in the corner like, oh, there's no traffic today. You get right around that corner, bam, traffic. And she's like, what are you so upset about? I said, you jinxed us, man. You jinxed us. Something else is going on. Bam. So she's starting to realize that maybe she does have the power. She holds the power to change the cosmos. What do you think, Jeannie? You hold the power? She's saying she holds the power. But anyway, she can alter the universe with three words or a thought, even if you think it sometimes. And let me tell you about thinking it. My mother-in-law couldn't stop saying that. All the cars held up pretty well. Don't! Oh, there's not a lot of traffic. We're going to make good time. Don't! It's just like, come on, Pam. Please don't say that stuff. Don't say that. You know who's sitting in the back? Mr. 1968 rabbit's tail, piece of red tape, salt over my left shoulder. Can't be saying this kind of stuff because I believe in it. And if someone believes in it, then it ruins everything. You know, so what happens there, we got lucky because we really didn't get the jinx so much. But we went an hour and a half out of our way because I'll tell you, I mean, I told you we're driving a lot. We were on the Florida trip a couple weeks ago. Now we went to down to South Carolina. We went 66 to 81 to 77 to 26 instead of going straight down 95. 95 to me is a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare, especially in South Carolina and Southern Virginia. Yeah, you can go to, south of the border and see Pedro, but please, please. Do I need more knickknacks and tchotchkes or anything of that sort? Especially stuff from Pedro? I don't need that stuff. I don't need it. 35 years, wonderful. Been down there my whole life south of the border. Stop putting, you know, it's like jungle habitat at Six Flags in Vernon, New Jersey. You drive out of there, they're putting bumper stickers on your car. Stop! Leave my car alone. But anyway, we went that far. And then we went this far because there was a tropical storm down in South Carolina. So we decided to outrun it, and we did it. We did it. These weathermen, I don't understand the weather right now because it's too advanced for its own good. Weathermen are too advanced for their own good. They got too many computer models, too many things to decide, to look at, to check on. I swear to goodness, just give me Doppler radar and tell me how quickly the storm is moving, and I will tell you when it's going to rain or if it's going to rain at all. And just give me the high pressure and the low pressure, and I can tell you if it's going to be stagnant or not. I have no meteorology degree. I have nothing. I have Doppler weather radar, and that's about it. That's about it. But I could tell you what's going on. We used to play a game at Lulu's Bait Shack in Atlanta, Georgia. All the rain came from Birmingham, Alabama, over to Atlanta. It was right on I-20. So we used to play a game. We put money on it because this is what you do when you own a bar or work at a bar and you're there in the off hours or there all the time. You get dumb. I'm a college-educated man, and I was getting dumb. We were having conversations. Who's stronger, Mike Tyson or Lorenzo Lamas from Renegade? And that's how stupid things got, how silly things got. I mean, I think back to it. Bo Sharp, that was our doorman. He's like, no, Renegade's tougher. Renegade's tougher. Get out of here, Bo. Mike Tyson would rip up Lorenzo Lamas in a minute. Just mush up his hair. The fight would be over. But anyway, we'd sit out there and you'd bet on anything. Because, as Don Myrera, the comedian, once said, he said, the worst part of working in a restaurant is opening. Because you're sitting there, you're talking to all your friends, and then the first customer comes downstairs, and you're like, damn, customers. It's like, I don't want to wait on them. Because, you know, the first people always into a restaurant are always the most demanding as well. Nothing ever goes easy on that trek, on that bill. Oh, I didn't like it because the kitchen's not ready. No one's ready to open. Once things start humming, then you get things going. But anyway, we bet on the rain. And we would get within 4 or 5 minutes of when it started raining because we had a porch outside at Lulu's Bay Shack, so we'd have to take everything in. And we got really, really good at it. So all of this stuff, people with these high pressure, low pressure, we got to take the European model, the Bermuda model, enough of the models. Because it was supposed to rain in Charleston, South Carolina the whole weekend. It's tropical storms wash out. We got some rain. And unfortunately, it rained when we went to Fort Sumter. And that was a pain in the neck. But Ryan and I, we were able to dodge the raindrops, get the history. Abner Doubleday. By the way, if you don't know who Abner Doubleday is, he was a major general, or he's a major, excuse me, in the Union Army. And this guy, not only was he the inventor of baseball, or the so-called inventor of baseball, that's still up in the air, or has been disputed lately, or the last 20 years or so. But this guy was in every battle in the Civil War. Every major battle, he was there. Good for him. I mean, every time I go to read a plaque, whether I'm in Manassas or at Fort Sumter or Gettysburg, Major Abner Doubleday was there. These guys had they traveled a lot, up and down, down and forth, back and this way, that way. But anyway, he was there, and we dodged the raindrops. What am I saying? I don't even know anymore. I don't even know. This show is terrible. Turn off the internet. Turn it off now. I'm doing you a favor. I'm telling you. Turn it off. So I was talking about this 8-hour car trip. My wife was like, you're going to talk about my mother-in-law tonight, aren't you? Or my mother. And I'm like, no, never. I guess right now I will. Because I know she never listens. My mother-in-law doesn't want to hear anything I have to say. Why would she listen to this show? But anyway, remember that Twitter site or whatever? Stuff my dad says? I was just thinking about that today. I could just put some of the stuff my mother-in-law says. And just everything she said, it was just incredible. Hypocritical, this, that, the other thing, everything. But I can't dump on her too much. Trip was good. It was for her 70th birthday. And it's also Mother's Day. So she always gets that weekend. You know, one day I just want to celebrate Gina. I want to celebrate my wife. But I'm always on a trip with my mother-in-law. How you doing? Not too good. No! Speaking of Charleston, South Carolina, and before I get into this, the phone number for the show is 773-897-6423. That's 773-897-6423. The program is called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negrin, and I say I'm here every Tuesday night from 8 to 9 p.m., but I wasn't last week. Ryan had a baseball game. The Cubs, the 8-and-under Cubs in the Upper Montgomery Baseball League were playing. They were battling it out. I think they were battling the Mets, actually. Had to go. Got to watch my son. So I missed the show. And if I miss the show, you miss a lot. You miss a lot. I don't miss anything. I'm fine. I know what's going on. But you miss a lot. You miss my opinion. You miss my thoughts. You miss my stuff. Right? Right. But anyway, Charleston, South Carolina leads me into saying this. There are no more secrets in America. I might have talked about this before, but there are no more secrets in America. And my trip to Charleston has confirmed this fact. The internet has killed the hidden gem. The last time I was in Charleston was about 12 years ago. I actually went with my mother-in-law again, but we didn't have kids at this particular time. We went to see my brother-in-law, Michael Scafuri, who's working on the H.L. Hungley. He's an archaeologist, so they brought up the sub. He's pulling out all this stuff, giving presentations, the whole nine. But anyway, we went down to Charleston about 12 years ago, and during that trip, I fell in love with Charleston. I've been there one other time or two other times, and I'm just like, this is the best place. I love it. I love it here. You know, Southern charm, the Gullah language, you know, the West African Gullah. It was just a different place and a place that time forgot. Not so much antebellum because of the war did come to Charleston. But it had its charm, the row houses, the beautiful mansions on the water, the Battery, Fort Sumter, the restaurants. Everything was great. They had a slave market, which they turned in, started calling the city market. you know, and had artisans and little knickknacks, all of this kind of stuff. You're just like, oh, it's so charming. I want to go back to Charleston. I want to go back to Charleston. Good food, this, that, the other thing. And I'm looking, and we went on a horse and carriage ride. And they were telling us about the history of Charleston, et cetera. They said that Charleston has 31,000 residents, 18,000 college students, and 5 million visitors a year. 5 million visitors a year. So I wanted to see what it was back 12 years ago. How many visitors came to Charleston, South Carolina years ago? I couldn't find that number. But if they had a million, I would be shocked. Well, maybe not as shocked, but I would say in the million, not 5 million. And let me tell you, when sometimes a place can become too popular. Everybody's there. We got to see Charleston. They told us it was great. And we're going to find the fun there no matter what. But Charleston's dead. It's over. It's done. Not to the people who have never seen it before, but the people who have been there and experienced what it was. This is my opinion. I mean, yeah, I was there with kids. I was there with the mother-in-law. I was there with the brother-in-law, you know, in-laws. I just wasn't there with my wife. But it's not the town I remembered. It's not as quaint as I remembered. That city market with the artisans and all of that, now they have two shifts, the 9:30 to 3:30, to 5, and then the 6 to 10. And you know what they're selling in there? Baseball cards. They're selling plaques. They're selling the same old garbage. The only thing they didn't have there that you would see on a New York street fair is like fried corn and or, you know, 300 thread fake Egyptian cotton sheets and socks. You know, that's the only thing they didn't have, socks and sheets. But they had every other piece of junk that you would find at a New York street fair that you would do there. There's no more quaintness. It was nothing. I mean, I was talking to my brother-in-law about this. He was trying to refute what I was saying. He said, no, the internet has its purpose. Of course it has its purpose. I'm not arguing the internet. But he goes, it's making everything better. It's not making secrets in America better. There are no more secrets. And that's what's killing us. There's no more local things. Everybody has to know about it right away. There's no more regionality. You know, the South wants to be the South. Forget it. If something's good's coming out of the South, everybody's got to be there. Everyone's been there. No, because it's a badge of honor now to go onto the internet and find something that's in the top 10 and say, oh, I've done it. You know, I believed in experience. I loved experience. My dad and I would talk about this. And I went to Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee for one reason. It wasn't academics. It was for experience. The academics were, I don't want to say above my head, but that was one of the smartest places I've ever been to. I thought I was a smart guy, and I got to Vanderbilt. And there were kids who I told you sounded like the biggest rednecks, et cetera, who would kick my butt in terms of anything in terms of intelligence. I might have had more common sense than they did. I might have had more street smarts. I held my own, but they were just smarter. Book smarter, for sure. For sure. They were, I don't know, some of them were on genius level. Coming into school already inventing things, you know, having patents on removable cast. I was just like, what do you do, Bruce? So I went to Vanderbilt for the experience. And let me tell you, Vanderbilt's a prime example. When I went to Vanderbilt University in 1986 and graduated in 1990, which is amazing because I'm only 23. No, but when I went there, it was a secret. Nobody ever heard of Vanderbilt University. I was in a fraternity called Kappa Alpha Order, founded on the principles of Robert E. Lee and, you know, Robert E. Lee in terms of the founder of, not of the Southern leader, but the founder, or excuse me, the president of Washington University, Washington Lee University now, the ideals of a lost South, blah, 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 blah. You know, the people really bought into it. We weren't that gung-ho on it. A bunch of Southerners, and it was a Southern fraternity, etc. It was interesting. It was very interesting for me, especially being a New Yorker. And it's funny because everybody I went down there, everyone's like, oh, you're going to come back with a Southern accent, man. I'm like, no, I didn't come back with anything. I might have lost a little bit of my accent. What all those other guys came back with a New York accent because they were making fun of me all the time. I used to have a terrible accent. Terrible. Me and the seniors, you know, we used to do the things. Yeah, yeah. So all these guys would make fun of me. They're like, hey, Bruce, yeah, yeah. And they'd use the curses and all this kind of stuff. So I've ruined their accent, which made me laugh. But anyway, the point being, Vanderbilt University, I didn't know anybody from the North at Vanderbilt. Nobody. It was very rare. So we had this thing, North-South drink-off, during Old South Week. Yeah, exactly. It was that kind of fraternity. But this is what I'm talking about. We have Old South Week, so North-South drink-off. Okay, anybody from the North in this fraternity, you guys up there, and they would put out the state. So you had to stand on your state, and you'd have to drink the keg. Whoever finished the keg won. So there were 1,000 guys from Texas, 1,000 guys from Georgia, Louisiana, Kentucky. There were three of us, one from New Jersey, me from New York, and one guy from Ohio, I believe. And then there were some guys in Missouri, too. So they're like, okay, they left it like this for an hour. It's like, oh, guys, you got to change this up. Got to change this up. And finally, someone had a heart and said, okay, New York, you move to Texas. It's like, that's how many Southern or how many Northerners knew about Vanderbilt University. And it was an incredible experience for me. It opened my eyes up to the United States. I haven't really been out west much. I haven't been to the Southwest, at least, or to the Northwest. But, you know, I've been to other places, and I know what America is by going to Vanderbilt University. I know what America is. I know what the South is. I know it's not as stereotypical, as backward as every country song says it is. And I've learned country music down there. I learned to appreciate country music while I was at Vanderbilt. Because these two guys, Reagan Richard, Cajun, full Cajun, you talked about him before. He was like, hey, bro, I'm a normal man. And Steve Patterson from Jackson, Mississippi, actually Pearl, Mississippi. Hey, man, I thought I was going to die, Bruce. I thought I was going to die. That's, he had a high voice. And he spoke, so everyone said Southerners speak slowly. This guy was like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. When my brother came to visit, he's like, what the heck was that? Hurricane Steve. But anyway, they used to go out at night, and they used to leave a Clint Black CD on repeat. And we weren't roommates, but our rooms adjoined, or were next to each other. And I'd listen to Clint Black for the next 5 hours while I'm trying to do homework or schoolwork, which was very rare, at least in my freshman year. But I was like, son of a. And that Clint Black album is still my favorite. Would you believe it? Would you believe it? They pounded it into my head. But anyway, the point being now, I went down to see Vanderbilt University. You know what the top two application givers to Vanderbilt University are? No surprise, Texas is number one. Number two is New York State. The state of New York has the most people applying to Vanderbilt University. Bam! Secret over. Done. 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 About the Jazz Fest in New Orleans. Used to be great. Jazz Fest was the best. But everyone found Mardi Gras. You know, it was on Cops one day, so everybody found Mardi Gras. Got to come down to Mardi Gras, man. We get drunk and pour beer on each other's heads. Awesome. You know, I was about 25, so I wasn't really into pouring beer on anybody's head anymore. So we went to Jazz Fest at the New Orleans Fairgrounds. It was crowded, but just enough people to make Bourbon Street interesting without being shoulder to shoulder. Go down to Jazz Fest now, forget about it. 500,000 people, I don't even know the numbers, but you can't move. Can't get a hotel room, can't do anything. You know, it's just one of those things, it's like gone. It's not as much fun. I don't know if I've crossed the line here to where I'm 47 years old. I finally figured out how old I am. I am 47. But I'm 47 years old, and maybe I look back at it, it's like, oh, the good old days, you know, the good old days. I'm starting to have that, the good old days. But they say the good old days weren't as good as they used to be, or not as good as you think they are. Damn, Skippy, they were. They were. Jazz Fest was better when you weren't wall-to-wall with people sweating your face off. Mardi Gras was better before everybody went there. Vanderbilt University was better in terms of experience, maybe not in terms of the people they recruited, or the national impact it had. You know, a college has to get out of that. But Vanderbilt University was better. Things were better when there were secrets. The Grateful Dead made a career. They didn't even have to get out of San Francisco. They could have stayed in San Francisco. Kurt Cobain, right? Dave Grohl and the other guy, the big doofy guy who played bass from Nirvana. They made it big. Every band in Seattle is signed. And that was before the internet, but that was just the mentality of record companies. Oh, you got a guitar and a flannel shirt? Let's sign you. Crazy. But the internet has killed the hidden gem. It's gone. It's done. South Carolina now is the number one, or Charleston, South Carolina, is the number one tourist destination in the United States, from what I was reading on the internet. Number one. It can't handle 5 million people. It's turned into a tourist trap. And that's what happens. It's lost its charm. It's gone. It's done. It's over. Those are harsh words, Bruce. It is. They are. But it's done. That's my opinion. I mean, it's just a shame. It really is a shame. People find something and they kill it. Because they're always saying, and plus they overpromote it because it's like, oh, I've been there. It was the best. It was the best. Everybody's, you know, addicted to hyperbole. It was the best, dude. It was the best. I was down there. I got drunk as it could be, dude. I don't know. It's sad is what it is. To me, it's sad. I think so. And the program's called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negrin, and I'm here every Tuesday night, or at least most Tuesday nights, from 8 to 9 p.m., talking about the issues that emanate from Montgomery County, Charleston, South Carolina, New Rochelle, New York, and beyond. My phone number is 773-897-6423. That's 773-897-6423. Hey, I want to apologize if you feel like the show's taking weaving this way and that way. It's just, I've been out of touch in terms of the political scene. I've been out of touch in terms of Montgomery County a little. Work has been tough. The kids been running me around, and plus these trips. You know, but this is how I feel now. You know, I mean, you get a chance to sit 8 hours in a car, and you're like, the good old days, you know? And maybe things were better. And I guess I'm not done with this topic, but maybe things were better, because I was talking about the Rangers, right? I'm watching on television 9-10 different angles to watch the Rangers and Washington Capitals. But you know what I do? It's like I can't stand the broadcast, and I can't stand the in-between periods because they talk about nonsense. They don't really give you the feel of the game. It's just something to promote Premier League soccer, in my opinion. That's the way I feel CNBC or MSNBC, whatever, the NBC Sports Network does it. But anyway, it's what I do. I get on the internet, right? I have use for the internet. I get on the internet, go to TuneIn Radio, and I turn on 98.7 ESPN New York, and I get Dave Maloney and Kenny Albert. I hearken back to the days of radio. You know, you think about it, maybe black and white television wasn't that good. I could understand that. You know, getting a new 40-inch or 42-inch television, 60-inch television, sometimes these televisions can get too big. But seeing the game or something on a big television makes a difference. It's nice. I like watching the Super Bowl when my team's not in it on a big television. You know, get to see the game, blah, blah, blah. But I'll tell you, the people who don't listen to radio or not part of radio, you're missing out on something. One day, if you get the right announcers, radio is better than television, hands down. Because to use your imagination, they paint you a picture and you use your imagination. You're sitting there and you're part of it. It might be background noise, but you don't have to visualize so you can do other things. There are two instances in my life. When I first moved to a house in New Rochelle, had a backyard that had a lot of weeds in it, et cetera, so we had to dig out some stuff, and I had to do a lot of weeding. So I would put out my transistor radio, not transistor, I don't want to get ridiculous, but I put out my portable radio, turn it to WFAN 66, listen to Gary Cohn and Howie Rose do the Met games. These two guys, I wish everybody had a chance to listen to them, because not only were they on point with the ball game, but they understood how to pace baseball. There was no fake enthusiasm. There was no fake excitement. If the game was boring, they would tell you it's boring. They would talk about some other things. And things that you knew, they would relate to you. They would talk about Rocky and Bullwinkle or the coffee exchange or whatever. You know, they would make fun of the commercials that were there. But they kept you intertwined. They kept you as part of the broadcast, a radio broadcast. Not just the game, but the radio broadcast. It was funny. I listened to them so much on radio that year. I went to my dad's house once, and he had the Met game on, and I forgot who the pitcher was. Alejandro Pena, I think, or somebody like that. I had never seen him. I knew all the Mets. I knew everybody. I knew their records. I knew their stuff. I knew their ERAs, their RBIs, their home runs, etc. But I'd never watched the Mets play. And except for the guys I had seen play about a year or two before, like David Wright, etc., some of these pitchers, I knew who they were. I knew everything about them, but I didn't know what they looked like. And it was fantastic. And it was like a Billy Crystal experience. You know, when he talks about going into Yankee Stadium, And oh, and the grass was so green that day. Yankees, and I saw the Mick. Wow. I don't know why he sounds like the Penguin, but it was like going in and see the biggest stadium you've ever seen, the greenest grass, etc. Seeing it live. But I had that kind of experience just even on television because I'd never seen some of these Mets before. And it was just, but the way they explained them, I knew who they were. So I went back to listen to the hockey games on radio. I was in the car, totally missed Sunday's Ranger game. Totally missed it, but I had it on the internet. I had it on the radio. And I was able to imagine, boy, was I into it, on the radio. But this is what I'm talking about, superstitions. This Wednesday, I got to listen on the radio. I can't watch the game. I got to listen on the radio. Because sometimes I want the homer effect. Sometimes I want to hear what my guys have to say. I don't want to hear what Pierre Maguire has to say or some national guy who's trying to show how much he knows about the NHL. I don't care about the NHL. I don't care about Major League Baseball. I care about the Mets. I care about the Knicks. I care about the Rangers. I care about the Giants. The New York football Giants, by the way. That's what I care about. But you go back to the days where radio, people would sit around and listen to radio. Do it one time. Go out to your backyard. Do something, but put the game on. Put the game on. Listen to it at night. It's like there's a guy now, John Batchelor. Sometimes he talks too much when he thinks he's trying to prove what he knows. But he has a lot of interviews, and he's got a good show. It's on WMAL, I believe. You can catch it on Baltimore, BAL or MAL. And you can listen to it at night, and it's like, who else is listening? Who else is up? My mother was a night hawk. She was a night owl. She was a night owl, so I got my love of talk radio from her. I used to listen to all these guys years and years ago, and I got it from her. And Larry King, you know, John Batchelor. I forgot the Buchanan, Gary Buchanan. These guys with the overnight shows. It's like, who's doing it? I was reading an article about Dennis Elsis, from WFUV, who used to be on WNEW in New York when it was free-form radio. Can you imagine that? Free-form radio before commercial got into everything? You could play your own music. You didn't have some 27-year-old guy who's saying, oh, we just got paid off, so we got to play this club hit four times an hour. You could play anything. Go from Jefferson Airplane to Bob Dylan to the Cars. You know, just anything. Don't we all try to harken back to that? Doesn't someone listen to this and say, oh, you can pick Pandora Radio. You can pick iHeart Radio, the stations that you want to hear. Exactly what I want to hear. Back and forth. But the eclectic, the randomness of it is what I want to hear. Yeah, but, you know, radio maybe, it's a lost art. But you got to have the right guys. You really have the right guys. For all the people in New York, you're probably getting sound bites from a guy called John Walton. He does the Caps games down here. Woof. Even the people on the sports radio know it. He's like, he's in regular season mode when it's spring training. I mean, a guy, oh, we're going to roll back. Playing it up the wall. He sends a 165-footer. It bounces in front of Holtby. Score! Totally unexcited, and then all of a sudden he's excited. Put it in your pipe. Get out of here. Screw the Caps. That's right. Screw the Caps. Anybody I've offended in D.C., I'm glad, and I'm not sorry for it. I am not sorry for it. I was trying to figure out what team we're going to watch. Are we going to watch the Nationals, or are we going to watch the Orioles? I don't know. Maybe the Orioles. I like their ballpark better. But I can't watch American League Baseball. So guess what? I'm going to stay a Met fan. I'm going to make the kids a Met fan. And we're taking over D.C. We're going to just take it over. Because information age, you don't have to worry about it anymore. You can get your NHL package or your NFL. You can watch your teams from no matter where. No more secrets. No more secrets.
So, Bobby, did they ever catch that gorilla what escaped from the zoo and punched you in the eye?
No, Mama, the search continues.
Pay attention.
Pay attention, anyone. Because I'm going to talk about our next topic. Next topic is anyone can run for president. No more secrets. Anybody, if you have the money, can run for president, and we are proving it now. Just look at the Republican field. Ben Carson. Ted Cruz, Jeb Bush is going to get in the race. You know, I mean, who else? They got a couple others. They got the Carly Fiona, the head of, what was it, Dell or HP? She's in the race now. Anybody can run for president. It doesn't matter. You don't really even have to have any credentials anymore. I'm going to be president. Bring a camera with me. And what's scary about it, the people who are just running for president are raising money, real money, billions and billions of dollars. I was listening to Mike Lupica's show the other day. Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of New York radio because I cannot deal. Oh, the Caps are going to do it. Yeah, the Caps are great. Name one player before Alex Ovechkin. Began with a B, I think. Bono? Peter Bonger, you idiot. Get out of here, you front-running, rock the red, no good. Braden Holtby, a mountain man-looking. Conquistador-having. Cortez-looking. But anyway, anyone can run for president, and that's what's bothering me a little bit. It's like, so much so, Obama's really ruined everything. That's a blanket statement. But he's ruined everything in terms of elections. Because he saw his opportunity. I can't harp on this enough, and I think it's going to go on for another year. The more I see it, the more I read the newspaper about this guy and that guy. Washington Post with exposés on everybody. You know, let's find out about Ted Cruz. Let's talk about Ben Carson. Why is this important? Why is that important? This is how much money they raise. But anybody could run for president, which is great, I guess. But there's no common man running for president. You know, nobody who's going to put their name in the ring, is a hat in the ring, is a common man. You know, but the money they're raising, what I was saying with Lupica said something. He goes, if they just took a little bit of this $1 billion, if all of these guys would just pool some and put it into Wounded Warriors or something of good, instead of another buy-in in Des Moines, Iowa, for people who are going to caucus, Iowa's going to pick my president. Ugh. New Hampshire's going to pick my president. Take a walk. I know that's what we talked about a couple weeks ago. That's the last show we did, but I'm serious about that. Disenfranchised. I've been disenfranchised for the last 30 years. I got a right to be hostile. But really, I mean, president, anybody with a microphone now, anybody who can get in front of someone, I should run for president. I'm over 35. I was born in the U.S. It's like declaring for the draft. I had a friend named John Lemertz. And I told him that he was going to quit basketball because he was hurt his knee or something. I said, you should declare for the NBA draft. You'll get your name on ESPN. You'll get it on SportsCenter. This is 20 years ago. I said, you should go hardship. He didn't do it, but he would have gotten his name on ESPN. And out of Westcon University, John Lemertz, 6'8", power forward. Why not? But that's what's happening now. Anybody who feels like they have an idea can do it. And they're just going to bludgeon each other and beat each other up. But it's the opportunity. They see an opportunity. Chris Christie blew his opportunity. You know, he was going to be president. He should have jumped in with no experience. But I can't lead the people in New Jersey. Well, now you're stuck with the people in New Jersey. How about that? Now you're stuck. Ted Cruz. We talked about him before. You know, everybody, though, talking about the Republican Party, the party of old white men, old white men. The New York Post brought this up the other day. Old white men. Ted Cruz. How old is he? 40? Scotty Walker. Young guy. Ben Carson. Older gentleman. But an African American. You got the woman from HP or Dell. And then I forgot who else. You know, Jeb Bush from a real, you know, he married a Mexican, right? He married a Mexican lady. He's got his biracial family, just like Bill de Blasio. But it's just, okay, old white men. You show me the one old white man in that Republican Party running for president right now. Show you a couple old white people running for president on the Democratic side. Not that it makes it better. I'm not picking and choosing, but it's like, come on. Stereotypes out the window. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. But we live by stereotypes. We love stereotypes. Otherwise, we wouldn't have anything else to talk about. Oh, just a bunch of old white men in a room. When do I become that old white man? I think I've already crossed the line. I've crossed the Rubicon. I am the old white man. I know what escrow is. I know I've become the old white man because I do know what escrow is. But But yeah, if you got a dollar and a dream, it's like Lotto. You got a dollar and a dream, you can run for president. Doesn't mean you're going to get there. But you can run for it, and you can raise money, and you can have super PACs and Pac-Mans and pack a bag and everything. So it makes me sick. What else is bothering me? You're going to laugh when I say this one, because there are going to be some people like Adam Carp, Mark Giordano, a couple other people out there. What bothers me is negative people. What? Negativity, Bruce. That's what you live on. You live for negativity, Mr. Negrin. No, I don't. Because I do whatever. Even if I'm on a negative, I'm not negative. I'm just bringing up points. And even if it seems negative, I'm saying it with a smile on my face. Not a smirk, but a smile. Sometimes negativity is funny. If you can turn it around and make it funny. Like a Louis Black or something like that. It's funny. But it's so true. What you reap is what you sow. What you put out there is what's going to come back to you. If you want to run around the world with a sour face and be mad at the world, people are just going to leave you alone. You want to complain about everything? When something really does happen to you, people are going to be like, "Whoa, it's like Wolf. Did it really happen, or are you just complaining about it again?" You project. What you project out to the world is going to come back to you. I learned that lesson a long time ago. I might have been a little bit bitter. I don't know. You're young. You're the angry young man like Billy Joel. But, you know, what comes out of it is you learn. You definitely learn, and you say, enough of this. I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to come out there, and I'm going to try to, you know, not light up a room and glad hand people. I still have a hard time doing that. I can't do that. I told you I ran for office, but I still have a hard time walking into a room. Hey, everybody, Bruce is here. Hey. You know, once you get to know me, then I can be like, hey, Bruce is here. Because then it becomes fun, then because you know things, and you get in and you start needling people. You know, my sense of humor is pretty caustic, is pretty biting if you don't know who I am. That's why I don't say a lot of things. That's why I don't try to make jokes if I don't really know you, because I don't want to offend you. And because it's not my intention to offend. It's not my intention to needle you, to bother you. But once we get into a room and we know each other for a while, and you know what I'm about, and that I can sure as hell take it, then that's the game. And I'll tell you, nobody plays the game better than people from New Rochelle, New York. I was in a locker room once for a different hockey team. We had a bunch of New Rochelle guys and a bunch of guys from Larchmont, a bunch of guys from elsewhere. And the New Rochelle guys were just going at it. Oh, your mother. No, your mother. You big-headed. Just that kind of stuff. Back and forth. I mean, caustic and sarcastic and biting. Right to each other. But, I mean, all with a smile on her face. And no one's taking offense to it because this is how we grew up. And the guy comes up to me and he goes, boy, you guys from New Rochelle are just different. And we are different. It is a different situation. We just have a different sensibility. I like it. I like it. What am I talking about? I don't know. I really don't know. So what's going on here? A couple things. We're going to talk about something in New York City. Bill de Blasio. I don't know if you know who he is, but this guy is the mayor of New York City. Came in after Bloomberg. Was totally ripe for Democratic victory. But he went full progressive, full liberal, full progressive. But he's the real deal. I mean, he is what he talks about. He's lived that life before. Protests and down in South America with the communists, etc. You know, so it's not far from who he is. But New York swept him into office. Thinks he's the king of the world right now with the Working Families Party and talking about progressivism and income inequality, which I get. You got to address some of these issues. It's like global warming. Let me go on a tangent for a second, talking about global warming. I was listening to Rush Limbaugh the other day. I was spending a lot of time in the car, so now you know. And you just get tired of Grant and Danny talking about nonsense. What's more offensive, the Redskin name or Daniel Snyder? Stop manufacturing a conversation. Bring something to the table. I know you do something daily, but you could talk about certain things. You talk about issues outside of Washington, D.C., because Washington, D.C. might be one of the worst sports towns outside of the Redskins I've ever been in. Atlanta, Georgia is still high and above. But I'm listening to Rush Limbaugh, and he's like, the biggest fraud ever perpetrated on man is global warming. It's a fraud. Al Gore snowed everybody. You know what? And I said to this, I said, maybe so, Rush. Maybe so. Maybe it is a fraud. Maybe we... It's been perpetrated. We've been all hoodwinked. And I was like, these things, these ideas to curb carbon emissions and all of that kind of stuff, it's garbage. It's a joke. There's no proof. No proof at all. But you know what? Shouldn't you just protect the future anyway? Maybe someday there is going to be proof. Even if you don't believe anything, isn't it better to shut off the water and conserve it before the lake goes dry? Maybe is it not better not to have fracking and putting pollutants in the air? It can't be good. It just can't be good. Common sense tells you it's not good. Oh, there's no proof. But common sense is the proof here. There's the barometer. There's the things you got to work on. There's where you want to say progressive Bruce. There's progressive Bruce. Bruce, environmental issues. I believe in global warming. I think something's happening. Whether it's in a cycle, the ice age to the thaw out, whatever. I don't know. But shouldn't you protect what you have? Shouldn't you protect your environment? I mean, look at China, right? China's going to muddy up every stream they have with either chemicals or dirt or whatever. And that's where the problem's going to come. China's going to have to expand because they're going to have too many people who don't have enough water. Otherwise, there's going to be genocide. You know, it's just one of those things. That's where you have to fear China. I mean, economically, sure. But now, you know, Bruce, you might be stepping over the boundaries here. You're getting paranoid. Well, you know what? When I have no water to drink, I'm going to the next town. When there's no food to eat. I mean, this is what they did in the mountains of China. They banned barbecues. Barbecue. How are they going to get me my spare ribs, man? Oh, stereotype. Damn Skippy. But they banned barbecues. Smog alerts, you know, in Beijing. Something's wrong. Electric cars, you know what? Nothing's wrong with an electric car if it can get me where I need to go. Problem is, it's terribly expensive. But everybody's told me that you could get this brake and that brake. But, you know, those are going to run out one day. But it's a little bit expensive. But anyway, you know, progressive, right? So that's what I was talking about, Limbaugh. Come on, man. Perpetrating a fraud. What do you, Run DMC? Just take protections. Why get to that point? Oh, my teeth won't rot out for another 15 years. Well, they won't rot out for 30 years if you brush them. Right? It's like, take preventative measures so it doesn't happen. So it doesn't happen. So Rush Limbaugh, on you for global warming. But Bill de Blasio, the new John Lindsay. This is what I don't understand. This guy is out campaigning. He's campaigning. He thinks the mayor, being mayor of New York City, is a springboard to a national board. There isn't one. There isn't anybody in the history of New York mayors that have gone on to something bigger and better. And all these people are talking about de Blasio this, de Blasio that, and the people in Maryland are probably turning it off. But watch, he's going to come to your state. He's going to out Martin O'Malley. So he's coming. He's going to tell you, you know, he's going to have some speech about the Chesapeake coming up soon. So be on the lookout for it. But anyway, this guy is John Lindsay. The comparison should be there. They have to be there. Running around about national issues when Rome is burning. It might not be burning yet, but the lighter's been bought. You know, the lighter has been bought. You got crime on the uptick in New York. You got police tensions. Stay in your house. Clean up your own business. Even the Democrats inside New York State are saying this. And what's happening there is, well, New York State has proven itself to be corrupt, corrupt, corrupt. Sheldon Silver, the Democratic leader in the Assembly, is gone. Dean Skelos, the Senate Majority Leader, gone. Parit Bariha there, Bariha, taking him out, the U.S. Attorney General, a U.S. Attorney, taking him out. Andrew Cuomo, who knows what's going to go on there. There was another one who had his chance. Well, maybe he never really had his chance. His window never really opened up. But who knows? I mean, he had these three guys. There were three guys in a room in New York for a while. And now two of the guys are gone. Cuomo, what are you going to do? But de Blasio should be up there. I agree with the New York Post on this particular thing. You should be up there asserting yourself inside your own city. All you have to do is read The Ungovernable City. The Ungovernable City, a biography of John Lindsay, who gave away everything and then tried to get tough when it was too late. Progressivism, liberalism doesn't work in a city where everybody's at your door saying, give me more, give me more, give me more than more. He's going to get caught. He's going to campaign. And campaign, I mean, how long has he been in office? A year, year and a half? I mean, what does he think? I don't know what he thinks. There was actually a story a couple of weeks ago how he thinks that, you know, he could be the Democratic nominee for president. Mayor of New York City? Talk about no experience at all. He's Barack Obama, knew where Washington was. You know, at least he was in Congress, could walk the halls. Bill de Blasio, come on. Come on. And the people in New York, I mean, you might not get another term. I mean, crime in Central Park, going back, hearkening back to the old days. Oh, when New York had character. Let me tell you, crime is not character. This is the thing that cracks me up. People are like, I know Times Square got cleaned up. I know there's certain other places that got cleaned up, you know, and Disney-fied. But still, when you can walk down the block without fear getting mugged, I think I'd go for that one. But Bruce, you were just talking about hearkening back to the days of old. Well, you know that radio I'd be listening to? I'd be clubbed over the head and be gone. I wouldn't have that radio, so I wouldn't even like the days of old. So take that. Oh, boy. Program's called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Degger, and I'm here every Tuesday night talking about the issues that emanate from Montgomery County and beyond. A quick shout-out to New Rochelle. I was just reading something the other day on Talk of the Sound blog, Robert Cox. This guy has a blog, talks about city politics and all these other things. I'm not a huge fan of his. I wasn't always criticized and always he would go into your blog post and tell you how to rewrite them. You know what? Don't rewrite my blog post. Then you're editing my opinion, editing what I wrote. Take a walk with that. So you know what happens when that happens? Bruce Negrin takes a walk. I take a walk. If he can't take a walk and it's his thing, then I take a walk. But anyway, I was reading something about Noam Bramson, another guy who's missed his window. He's going to be mayor of New Rochelle for the rest of his life. But anyway, there's in District 6, where I used to live, where I ran for office, there's a lady called Shari Rackman. She wanted to be reelected. They went into the Democratic caucus in New Rochelle, and supposedly she got primaried because Noam Bramson was mad at her for going against his wishes on a vote or two. She's been on the council for close to 4 years. She's gone against him twice. Twice, mind you, twice. And he wants her out. He wants his own people. His own people. It's not a cabinet, Gnome. It's not a cabinet. It's not who you get to pick and choose. Maybe you get to run for, you know, who you want. Yeah, sure, you want your buddies. But Shari Rackman had your backing 4 years ago. Because she voted against you and voted for the people of New Rochelle instead of you, instead of for your agenda. She's got to take a walk. She's got to leave. You petty, petty little man. And that's what it comes down to. Noam Bramson is a petty little man. If you see this guy on a ballot anywhere, or if he shows up in your town, as Minnie de Blasio, talking about how he could never, you know, even govern with Republicans, let alone vote for one. You know, that's the kind of divisiveness that happens. It happens in our small towns. It happens in our cities. When a guy like this, who's living, luckily living, every time he gets out of his own little comfort zone of New Rochelle, gets his teeth kicked in. Teeth kicked in. I mean, I did a little jig when Rob Astorino beat him for county executive. Mayor Noam Bramson trying to run for county executive. Mayor Noam Bramson trying to run for any office. There's nothing that bothers me more than when an elected official is tired of his own office, tired of being a mayor, tired of being councilman, and goes for another office, which is fine. It's fine. He ran for state senate or something, lost there. The next one that popped up, the next opportunity, the next window that opened up is county executive. Oh, I'm going to run for that. County executive is a junk position in Westchester County. Ike Leggett's got a lot of power here. Or because New Rochelle, there are too many cities, too many fiefdoms inside Westchester County in New York. There are too many cities. There's Yonkers, New Rochelle, Mount Vernon. It's not a county structure like Montgomery. You know, when you're county executive or county council in Montgomery, you know, you're talking for everybody here, which I don't particularly like. You know, if I need a stop sign, Who am I talking to? My county person? The Republicans in Montgomery County have given up the race, and they think it's easier to get people elected to state senate or state rep because it's a smaller area than getting someone elected to county council. It's crazy, isn't it? But, I mean, there's times where anybody who just keeps running for something, you're just a politician. You're not trying to help people. You're not trying to make things better. Oh, this seat's open? Throw my name in there. Another one was Susan Tettner. She ran for office, right? She ran for District 1 in New Rochelle years ago. She lost for that. Then she ran for something else. Then she ran for city judge. I'm just going to keep running until I get a job for life. You know what? On you for that. That's not governance. That's trying to set yourself up and thinking that you're governing or being a judge or something else. Poor. It's poor. It shows the character of who you are. Anytime there's an open office, get me some Adidas sneakers, man. I'm running. I'm going to run for it. Run for them hills, man. There's dog catcher election open. I'm running for that. It's got to be better than Mayor New Rochelle. Yeah, and I got a bone to pick with Noam Bramson. It is personal. It will always be personal. But you know what? Shari Rackman, I'll give her a call, and we could talk about personal. We could discuss how Petty Bramson there, Petticoat Junction Bramson, tries to run with an iron fist in a city of 72,000 people, and he's not even listening to the city, the people. And I'm not talking about the Republicans or the same four guys or curmudgeons. Oh, don't do anything. Don't try anything. Don't try anything. You're ruining our city. You know what? He's doing some things, and the city council is trying to do some things in New Rochelle to make something change, because otherwise New Rochelle is going to die. I was in a car with Patrick Boyle and my brother for a hockey tournament in Larchmont a couple weeks ago. And we were talking about the opening of a new store. It was Pure Hockey and a new store in New Rochelle. And so Patty was like, he's from Larchmont. He doesn't know where it is. It's like it's on 317 Main Street. I said, it's in the old boxing gym. And Eric's like, yeah, that used to be the old dealership. And I was like, yeah, which was the – and Patty just started laughing because he's like, oh, so New Rochelle is just the place of the old. Right, everything gets replaced every couple weeks, every couple years, it seems. Exactly. So all these people who don't think that New Rochelle needs an overhaul, a makeover, you're wrong. You're wrong. And if this RXR can get something done and build those towers and have real transit-oriented development where you're only about a block away from the train station, where you don't have to take a bus circulator, bus circulators don't really work. Unless you put free bus right on the side. Don't put advertising. Put free bus. Because everyone thinks you always got to pay on a circulator. It took like four or five buses before I jumped on one in Baltimore. The downtown circulator. I didn't know if that was a real bus or not. I don't have a card. Starting to get on a roll here. But if that works for New Rochelle, it works. And that's all I got to say about that. the program's called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Stenger, and I'll be back next week, next Tuesday, talking to you. My wife's going to be gone again. She's back up in New York, so I got to put the kids to bed. I'm going to let them run around for an hour before child services get here. I'll lock the door, so don't worry about it. But next week, you got to call. I feel, man, more of you listening on the archives, which I appreciate. But if you want to get in touch with me, reach out to Facebook, Outside Looking In with Bruce Negrin. Just look up my Facebook page. You can hit me up at BruceNegrinRadio@yahoo.com. And take this number down because one day you got to call. There's got to be something on your mind. Believe me, I don't need you to call me to keep talking. I can always keep talking. But I want to hear what you have to say. So write this number down at 773-897-6423. 773-897-6423. Otherwise known as 1-800-CARS-FOR-KIDS. Step up to the mic because nobody's going to say it for you. And do me a favor. Do something today that will make you better tomorrow. This is Bruce Negrin, and I want to thank you for listening.
you need to. Back in the arms of a good friend. Oh, honey, believe me, she loves to call you my girlfriend.
Someone to love, 'cause you need to get back in the